Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Vidyut Sridhar, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, a look into a helpful campus writing resource, the impact of K-pop at Northwestern, the science behind why we always resolve to make New Year's resolutions, an MLK-themed poetry selection on Well-Versed, and the latest pop culture news on the B-list. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. Struggling under the weight of endless midterm and final papers, job applications, and more? Reporter Gabby Shell looks into one of the university's most useful, if not the most used, resource. Here's more on The Writing Place.
Tucked away inside Core in Maine sits The Writing Place, a resource for students who want an extra set of eyes on their writing, whether that's a paper, an application, or a story. 50 years ago, then-Professor Wallace Douglas and graduate student Bob Gundlach, later a Northwestern professor himself, came up with the idea for The Writing Place after noticing many students hadn't yet developed college-level writing skills. Originally, The Writing Place functioned as a drop-in clinic with workshops on grammar, composition, and different paper styles. However, nearly half a century later, the model has shifted. Now, The Writing Place is a hub for peer-to-peer tutoring, where trained juniors and seniors help other students work their way through formulating, drafting, and revising their papers and beyond. The peer-to-peer model has been so successful that the program has even expanded to include a separate service for graduate students.
Getting feedback from peers is just qualitatively different than, you know, getting feedback from mentors or professors or things like that, that it's easier to ask questions and be vulnerable and just chat with someone sort of on the same level when they're your peer.
That was Elizabeth Lenigan, the founding director of the Graduate Writing Place. Lenigan began her career with the Writing Place when she was a graduate student at Northwestern herself, and noticing the utility of the Writing Place's multifaceted support for undergraduates, push for the creation of an entire graduate student-run program. While The Writing Place primarily helps students with papers, whether they be short reflection pieces, final papers, or full dissertations, they serve whatever writing needs their clients may have.
Writers come in with all sorts of things. We see, especially in the fall, a lot of people coming in with materials for the job market, for instance, because people who are applying to be professors elsewhere are doing it now to start next fall. So, you know, they would come in and we work sort of synchronously together.
This interdisciplinary approach to writing coaching makes The Writing Place popular with the students it serves. Communication second year Ellie Cato, a self-described Writing Place devotee, highlights the versatility and skill of the tutors across different writing styles.
There's nothing they can't do in what I've seen. I've gone to them with like research papers. I've gone to them with analytic papers. I even went a few weeks ago to help with an application.
This versatility isn't necessarily because The Writing Place employs tutors across every discipline for when the need arises. Instead, tutors approach every kind of writing with a general approach that asks the writer to examine their own strengths and weaknesses as they hone their message. Weinberg third year and Writing Place tutor Andre Rocker explains.
You might come in with a piece of writing and think, this is too wordy, right? I don't know if I'm being direct or clear enough. What I want to do when I'm working with the writer is help them understand why they are having that light go off. So like, what in your mind, what in your previous education has caused you to identify what you're writing as too wordy? And all at the same time, you know, I also want to help you recognize your own strengths.
By asking writers to critically reflect on both their ideas and their skill set, tutors help the students that come in strengthen their pieces on their own. For Cato, this more reflective, discussion-based approach to tutoring was what got her hooked.
I have all these ideas and I need someone to bounce the ideas off of or to help weave them together. And I was surprised like how much I got done in just that 1 hour session, and it kept me going back.
But what does that look like? For Rocker, it's helping his tutees find their passion and interest within the constraints of the assignment.
So I'll sort of ask you a question like, what do you like so far about the thesis you've written? You know, and hopefully we get beyond something like, oh, well, it answers the prompt. Right? Maybe it's something about like, you're able to shape something, like you're able to shape this one assignment into something that you really wanted to talk about for a long time.
By shaping the conversation to focus on his 2D's interest, Rocker aims to refocus the notion of academic writing as something done for just a grade to be instead about the pursuit of knowledge, inspiration, and intellectual passion. When students come to engage in debate, to expand their thought, and to improve their writing and communication skills, everyone, 2Ts and tutors alike, benefit. By cultivating the writing place into something more than just transactional, tutors like Rocker hope that the service can be a catalyst for growth.
You're going to grow, I think. Like I mentioned that the moments of, you know, the things that spark change aren't necessarily just like big events. If you get a 50 on your paper, your first paper in college, you probably will think, yes, maybe I need to change, right? But if you are, like anything else, if you are developing a habit of attempting to reach something different in who you are as a writer, you will then become that something different. And I think a great place to do that is at a place where the people staffing it are, you know, similarly inclined to improvement, so Northwestern students. Where it's free, you don't have to pay anything for us, and where we genuinely want to help, right? And yeah, you usually get a better grade, too, when you come to the Writing Place. So.
As tutors at the Writing Place hope to help grow each other and their fellow students as academics and as people, the Writing Self itself is looking to grow and evolve within the university. In the age of AI, it can be easy for students to overlook the utility of services like the Writing Place, Lenigan says. But as more students walk in the door and give the place a chance, she hopes they will realize how unique the Writing Place is and how valuable it is to the university.
I hope that it will continue to be flourishing and be a space where people, you know, continue to value the feedback and one-on-one assistance that they can get from other individuals. I think that, you know, like as AI is growing more and more popular, we see and read and hear a lot of things about how, you know, it can be a tutor and it can be, you know, and I think that, you know, we offer something unique.
But if the opportunity for better grades, one-on-one assistance, and intellectual discourse doesn't get you in the glass corridors, Rocker has something else that may entice you.
If you like the smart food popcorn, like the cheddar, white cheddar popcorn, you should also come to the Writing Place. Because for some reason why, we provide snacks at the Writing Place. And yet somehow, those are the only ones that aren't touched. I don't know, like I feel like those are that's a pretty good snack.
So, as your writing deadlines, midterm and final papers, or internship and job applications roll around, keep the Writing Place in your back pocket. Maybe you'll walk out with new ideas, a better paper, or stronger faith in your own writing abilities. Or maybe you'll just walk out with a bag of white cheddar popcorn. Either way, a win in my book. For WNUR News, I'm Gabby Schell.
K-pop is a big part of global music, but also the student culture and experience at Northwestern. Neha Yadavalli has the story.
What you just heard is a snippet from the song Soda Pop, which recently gained popularity because of its debut in the very popular new Netflix series K-pop Demon Hunters. Korean pop music isn't something that's only topping global charts. However, it also plays a significant role in the community in Evanston. The Northwestern K-Dance Group is a space for fans who love the music and the culture. Zoya Khan, a second year at Northwestern's Weinberg, is an executive member of the club and plays a large role in creating a strong
team. She's great. But our most recent performance, we actually just ended our winter showcase last weekend. We had about 75 performers, which is really exciting since we're still kind of a new club that's maturing. We had a variety of students from freshmen to grad students. And yeah, it was really fun.
But the group is not just about performance. It's also about building community through shared interests.
Sure. So it was started in 2017 by two students who felt like the K-pop community at Northwestern was a little bit unseasoned, let's just say. And so since then, we've been growing into not just a community, but a dance community as well.
Members say the group emphasizes flexibility, welcoming dancers and non-dancers.
A lot of the stuff we do is dance, but we really emphasize being able to spend time with other people with similar song interests and group interests. And we really like how everyone is just able to come together, be themselves, have some fun at events, and then, of course, the dance aspect, which there are different levels of commitment of.
Pop continues to expand globally. From the music charts to Netflix shows, campus groups like the K-pop dance group reflect how this genre is also a source of connection.
First of all, we have our spring show coming up April 17th, so we're just prepping for that right now, and we're really excited about it.
As the club continues to grow, its members say that it's the people, not just the performances, that make it special. For WNUR News, I am Neha Yadavali.
Ever wondered why we make New Year's resolutions? Is the practice even good for us? Supriya Akella explored this question.
There's a reason the second Friday of January is often called Quitter's Day. According to a recent survey done by YouGov, around 31% of Americans say they plan to make a resolution for 2026. But many fail to follow through. Resolving to go to the gym every day or read more books never seems like a better idea than on January 1st, the start of a new year. But why does this day carry so much significance? The history of New Year's celebrations goes back thousands of years.
We do, in fact, know a lot about New Year's celebrations in the ancient Near East and ancient Babylonia, especially from the first millennium BCE. We have some very detailed descriptions of rituals performed during the New Year festival, especially in Babylon.
That's Eckhart Fromm, a professor of Assyriology at Yale University. While he agrees that the roots of New Year's celebrations can be traced back thousands of years ago, he also says there are some misconceptions about the role of ancient Babylonians in the invention of resolutions.
I know that this is a kind of internet meme and that you can find all sorts of internet sites that claim that the Babylonians, in a way, invented New Year's resolutions and that people would make vows about paying back that debt on the occasion of New Year celebrations in ancient Babylonia and things like that. And in this specific way, I would say it's not quite correct.
Fromm says New Year's resolutions were not a significant part of the celebrations. Instead, the festival, known as Akitu, featured confessions from kings.
The Babylonian king was supposed to articulate a kind of negative confession of sins. He would say to the god Marduk, I have not sinned, I have not neglected your divinity, I have not ruined Babylon, nor ordered its dissolution, I have not struck the cheek of those privileged citizens of Babylon, nor brought about their humiliation. I've taken care of Babylon and did not destroy its outer walls. And he's ritually humiliated in this context. It's on the fifth day of the ritual, the high priest leads him in front of the divine statue of the god Marduk, of the main deity, strips him of his regalia, so takes off his crown and takes his scepter and so on, and then actually even slaps him on the cheek. And the king is supposed to cry. If he doesn't cry, it's a really bad sign. It's a bad omen and everything goes wrong the next year, so you better cry. And this is actually the background of this internet meme about the Babylonian tradition being the earliest where we can see something akin to New Year's resolutions.
Though they didn't make resolutions, the onlookers of the procession of statues, the common people of ancient Babylon, did consider their own futures during the event.
One thing we know is that these people would interpret the movements of the divine statues that were carried along in this procession as signs that would tell them something about the next year and about their own future. So in that sense, they certainly thought about their individual fortune as well.
So if some of the earliest New Year's celebrations didn't focus on individual introspection and resolution making, when did that tradition start? Alexis McCrossin is a professor of history at Southern Methodist University. She is currently writing a book on the history of New Year's observances.
January 1st probably became an important or prominent date for Americans by the 1840s or so.
Prior to the Industrial Revolution, the first day of the month carried little weight. Once wages and bills began to operate on a weekly or monthly cycle, the start of the year became more significant.
Was an important day because it was the beginning of the civil year, and there was a sense that it was a kind of moment to look backward, to take account of what had happened in the previous year, and also to look forward and maybe predict or plan for what might happen. And so by the 1840s, more and more Americans were doing that, and the day was a holiday in American cities. In cities, it was, you know, a day to visit, a day for entertainment, a day to party.
But the day's significance is complex, she says.
January 1st was a day in which contracts began, like annual contracts. So, for example, in the South, where we had a system of slavery, many enslavers hired out their enslaved people. And oftentimes there were even auctions on January 1st where enslaved people would be bid upon. And so it was really known as kind of a, they called it Heartbreak Day, actually, amongst the enslaved people, because it was a day when many families were torn apart because they would be hired out and sent away. So you have, you know, there are a lot of factors that are pushing New Year's into the forefront.
In terms of resolution making, McCrossin points to religion.
With evangelical religion, which really takes root in the U.S. in the middle of the 18th century and then really becomes a dominant cultural and religious form in the 1820s, evangelical religion sort of was predicated on this, on ideas about sort of turning over a new leaf.
She also speculates that resolutions took root in popular culture after World War II.
We don't really see communities making resolutions. And I think they're kind of very individualistic. I think they're kind of narcissistic. And we see the development, you know, the kind of like intensification of narcissism as a cultural style and of individualism as a cultural style beginning in the 50s. Probably has a lot to do with like the development of a celebrity culture and a consumer culture and a kind of obsession with like appearance and the self.
So should we be bringing resolution making into the next year? Wendy Gardner, an associate professor of psychology at Northwestern University, suggests that goal making can improve two types of psychological well-being, eudaimonic and hedonic.
Usually we choose goals that are meaningful for us. And goals give us a sense that we're progressing or growing, preferably towards sort of more ideal versions of ourselves. So those are both pretty related to eudaimonic well-being. And the thing is, when we achieve goals, and even when we're sort of pursuing goals successfully, that feels really good. You know, people talk about dopamine hits when they check things off of their to-do lists, right? And so we really like achieving our goals, and people feeling like they're making progress on their goals is a stronger predictor of psychological well-being than, for example, something like increasing financial wealth. Getting more money is not as good as feeling like we're making progress on our goals.
Specifically, setting goals on January 1st has the added benefit of being a collective practice.
Having sort of the close others in our lives support us towards our goals is often good for us and also really good for the relationship. Setting goals on a day when lots and lots and lots of other people are also setting goals, which gives you an opening to talk about those goals with friends and family, can be a really good thing psychologically.
Professor Gardner acknowledges that failing to meet our resolutions can cause disappointment and frustration. But, she says, there are some strategies to stay on the right track.
If your goals are making you anxious, think about the way you're thinking about your goals, right? Like, so if you're like, I have to get, you know, all A's, I have to, right? Do you have to, or do you want to? I mean, I would say, you know, just sort of interrogate yourself gently and be like, is there a way I can take this away from a should goal and make it a want or an ideal goal?
Some strategies are surprising.
What's really useful is to get yourself sort of feeling all motivated and then immediately turn and be like, what are all the ways I'm going to mess this up? And that's a process called mental contrasting and implementation intentions. You luxuriate in how awesome it's going to feel when you achieve the goal. You immediately turn to like, oh, so I'm going to get in my own way in all of these ways. And then you plan for each of the ways you're going to mess up and what you're going to do instead. People who do this are a gajillion times more likely to actually achieve their goal.
To hear the rest of Supriya Akella's story, head over to WNURnews.org. In honor of MLK Day, Mariah Petway reads a piece from Harlem Renaissance poet Langston Hughes.
Did you take a deep breath today? Welcome to Wellverse, WNUR News' poetry segment, where you'll hear timely poem readings to help you relax, reflect, and reconnect. Today marks the commencement of Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy. Dream Variations by Langston Hughes reminds us of Dr. King's sentiment that we all belong. Here is Dream Variations by Langston Hughes. To fling my arms wide in some place of the sun, to whirl and to dance till the white day is done, then rest that cool evening beneath a tall tree, while night comes on gently, dark like me. That is my dream, to fling my arms wide in the face of the sun, dance, whirl, whirl, till the quick day is done, rest that pale evening, a tall slim tree, night coming tenderly, dark like me. No matter who you are, I hope you know that if you were placed on this earth, you belong in it, and you deserve to live in it. Today, as we commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., remind someone that they add value to your life and to the spaces that they occupy. Find reasons to live today, because we are not just here to survive, but we deserve to live. For WNUR News, I'm Mariah Petway.
This week in pop culture, SNL spooked popular TV, the Bear season came to a close, and 2026 tours are firing up. Olivia Payne has the story.
Welcome to the B-List, your weekly roundup of celebrity mess and pop culture. This week, Stranger Things on SNL, Wuthering Heights, and The Bear's Loss. Stranger Things star Finn Wolfhard made his SNL debut as he hosted this weekend with musical guest A$AP Rocky. Surprise appearances were made by Sabrina Carpenter and Wolfhard's castmates Gaden Matarazzo and Caleb McLaughlin. The cast poked fun at the Stranger Things final season and even mentioned the popular conformity gate theory, in which fans mistakenly believed there would be an additional twist episode that was the real finale. In music, 2026 is promising to be a year full of monumental tours. Earlier this month, Bruno Mars released dates for the Romantic Tour, starting in April. BTS is also making a return with their World Tour. This will be their first full group tour since 2022. Pitbull will be bringing all his 2016 hits into this year with the I'm Back Tour. The North American Tour will feature special guest Lil Jon and kick off in the spring. New photos were released of the costumes from Emerald Fennell's upcoming film, Wuthering Heights, which releases on Valentine's Day. The outfits drew concern from the book's fans as it showed Margot Robbie, who plays Kathy, in colorful and modern dresses that are not period accurate. The adaptation's creators clarified that the costumes are not meant to be from one period in particular. After an NFL playoff streak that ignited fans around Chicago, the Chicago Bears were defeated by the Los Angeles Rams 20-17. The game was full of excitement as Chicago quarterback Caleb Williams made a last-minute touchdown, throwing the game into overtime.
After securing their first NFC North title since 2018, the loss left many Chicago fans heartbroken. That's all for the B-List this week. Check in next Monday to hear about what happens this week in pop culture. For WNUR News, I'm Olivia Payne.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Frigid temps continue tonight, with temperatures hovering around 5 degrees and winds gusting between 10 and 20 miles per hour. Tuesday looks to be warmer, with a high of 20 and a low of 18. Tuesday night brings a chance of snow. And temperatures continue to climb on Wednesday, with a high of 28 and a low of 13. There is also a possibility of snow Wednesday night. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. After months of deliberation, legislative gridlock, and public backlash, the Evanston-Skokie District Schools 65 Board will vote Thursday night on whether to close Kingsley Elementary School. Today, as part of their 37th annual commemoration weekend, Rainbow Push Coalition held their MLK breakfast event at the Fairmont, Chicago. Among those in attendance were Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, Illinois District 8 Representative Raja Krishnamurthy, and famed journalist Don Lemon. President Donald Trump continues to voice his support for acquiring Greenland from the Kingdom of Denmark. In a related text message aimed at Norway's prime minister, Trump said, quote, "Considering your country decided not to give me the Nobel Peace Prize for stopping 8 wars plus, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace," end quote. The message signifies a growing escalation between the United States and its European allies. And lastly, award-winning fashion designer Valentino Garavani died today in his residence in Rome, Italy. He was 93. Garavani's accomplishments included winning the Neiman Marcus Award and dressing stars like Audrey Hepburn and Zendaya. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR news stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Georgia Kerrigan, and our reporters are Gabby Shell, Neha Yadavali, Supriya Akella, Mariah Petway, and Olivia Payne. I'm Vidit Sridhar. Catch our next newscast Wednesday, January 21st. Now, back to scheduled programming.